Voir dire is an old French phrase, and quite literally it means to speak the truth. You might want to remember that definition in the unlikely event that it were to ever come up again. Every lawyer knows this term. It refers to the time when prospective jurors are asked questions, and based upon how well they tell the truth, they may be hired to serve as one of 12 men and women good and true. But I'm not here today to talk to you about courtrooms or attorneys. No, you see, today, truth itself is on trial, and you are the jury. Allow me now in the next few minutes to provide you with a small, random sampling from the mountain of evidence. O. Henry is generally considered to be the greatest short story writer in American history, but that's a lie. His real name is not O. Henry. It's William Sidney Porter. O. Henry is a pen name, a nom de plume, a pseudonym, an alias, a lie. For you see, it's no crime to lie if you're a fiction writer. In fact, by definition, that's exactly what you do. And the more they lie, and the better they lie, the more we like it, and the more we pay. The fact of the matter is, we can handle the truth. We require brief respites from reality in our movies, in our television shows, in our novels, and in our short stories. One of O. Henry's short stories that I believe I like more than any other is called The Last Leaf. It concerns a young lady stricken with pneumonia. As she lies, no pun intended, on her bed, she spies outside her window a tiny ivy plant growing on a building across the way. She lives in an artist colony in Greenwich Village. Winter is rapidly approaching. Cold, icy rain is falling, and harsh, bitter wind is blowing. One by one, the weather rips those tiny leaves from that fragile plant and casts them to the ground. As the lady watches through her window, she starts to develop an imaginary kinship with that plant, and soon she begins to believe that when the last leaf falls from that tiny plant, she too will die. Try as they may, her friends cannot dissuade her from this notion. And so she goes to bed that night, fully expecting to be dead by dawn. But to her surprise, she arises, fully alive the next morning. And when she looks through her window, she sees what appears to be one last leaf desperately clinging to that vine, defying death's sweet invitation. And so she gathers the strength and the will to survive. In a matter of days, she is much improved and well on the road to recovery. But there are more surprises in store for her. For you see, it was not a living leaf that she saw, but a masterfully drawn painting, a painting so great that no one could tell from a distance that it was not a living leaf. One of her friends, who had decided that he could not change her mind, hoped that he might be able to change her view. And so that night, after she'd fallen asleep, he took a ladder and he climbed up that building outside. And he created the greatest painting of his entire life, the masterpiece that he'd always sought to achieve but had never been able to accomplish. And unfortunately, that failure after year after year after year had driven him to drink, and that night was no different. And as he climbed down, he was tipsy, and he tripped, and he slipped, and he knocked the ladder over, and he froze to death in the snow. There are some lessons that I want you to learn from this story. Number one, a lie saved that lady's life. Number two, every lie has its price. It cost her friend his life. And number three, as a very great and ancient book tells us, there is no better friend than he or she who would lay down their lives for another. But it's all a lie. There is no basis in fact for any of this. Voir dire. We tell our children lies while they are growing up. Beautiful lies. Lies about the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. It's a magical time for them, full of wonder and merriment. Is there anyone so cruel and heartless as to even suggest that we stop telling such wonderful lies to our children? Voir dire. The very first president of the United States, George Washington, is alleged to have chopped down a cherry tree when he was but a lad. And when his father confronted him with this fact, he told his father, or so the story goes, "Father, I cannot tell a lie. It was I who chopped down the cherry tree." Historians have thoroughly researched this and found there to be absolutely no truth in it. It was a complete fabrication. Yet isn't it amazing how such a lie could have inspired so many to make honesty as the best policy, a fundamental part of their value systems? What are secret agents and undercover police officers lie on a daily basis. Undercover police officers hide their true identities so that they may gather evidence from wrongdoers and take them to court and gain convictions and put them away behind bars and make society safer. About a dozen years or so ago, there was a movie called True Lies. It concerned a secret agent who told his wife that he was a computer salesperson while all the time he was truly a spy. Well, just like almost every other movie, that movie's an entire lie. But there's a real-life secret agent by the name of Valerie Plame. She's not so secret anymore, for you see, certain members of the White House staff allegedly told the press about her true identity. And now her life may be in danger, and her career is ruined, as well as all of the other secret agents that worked at her cover agency, Brewster Jennings, and all the people, foreign nationals, who trusted the United States and provided information and other forms of assistance to us, valuable assistance that protected us from evildoers. They may be dead or dying, or they may be captured and tortured at some point in their lives. And why, oh why, I'm sure you're asking, would anyone do this? Do such a dastardly, traitorous deed? Well, you see, Valerie Plame's husband is a man by the name of Joe Wilson. He, just like Valerie, is a great and brave and patriotic American. And when he heard, as we all did, President Bush say in a State of the Union address several years ago that Saddam Hussein was seeking to acquire yellowcake uranium, fissionable uranium, uranium suitable for making weapons of mass destruction, he knew that this was a lie. He had thoroughly researched this, and he tried behind the scene for many months to get the White House to come clean and tell the truth. And when they refused time after time, he finally went to the press himself. He didn't like the idea of seeing the United States go to war based on a pack of lies. And so apparently, for reasons of political retribution, certain members of the White House staff allegedly informed the press about Valerie Plame's true identity. In my humble opinion, it's a very cowardly act to go after a man's wife when you got a beef with a man himself. But what else do you expect out of people who have shown themselves, in my humble opinion, to be liars and cowards and traitors? Most truth is beautiful. Most lies are ugly. But some lies are essential for the survival of a nation. And some truth is evil, heinous, monstrous, satanic, voila! My mother died of cancer many years ago. One day as I was pushing her in a wheelchair from one treatment room to the next, an orderly asked me, will that treatment that your mother just underwent, will it cure her? I can't imagine a more stupid nor insensitive thing to say. I could lie and preserve my mother's hope, or I could tell the truth and destroy it. Which would you do? Fortire! The Bible tells us that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, but you ask any geologist, any geophysicist, any archaeologist, any paleontologist, any anthropologist, any chemist, any biologist, any physicist, any astronomer, any scientist whatsoever, and he or she will tell you that quite simply does not correspond to any known facts. Did God lie? Or did he or she, as the case may be, simply tell something to people who lived 6,000 years ago that they could accept? And gradually, as a human capacity for understanding evolved, allow us to learn the truth about the size and age of our miraculous universe. You know, somehow or other, I just don't think that God's all that worried about his or her credibility. And frankly, come to think of it, neither am I. I teach accounting from time to time, and I've learned over the years it's best not to tell the truth up front. It only confuses my students. So I lie to them. I tell them the rules, and I tell them that there are no exceptions to the rules. And when they have sufficiently mastered the basics and are ready to proceed to the next level, I tell them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. I tell them the rules, and I tell them every last stinking exception there is. I've never had a student come to me and tell me, you lied to me, you can't teach me anymore. I've never had a student come to me and say, you lied to me, I don't trust you anymore. I've never had a student come to me and say, you lied to me, I've lost all faith and confidence in you. No. Instead, they thank me for taking a difficult subject and making it that much easier to learn. And so, if you live in a black and white world where everything that's true is good and everything that's a lie is evil, I'm here today to tell you, I pity you. As Shakespeare said in Hamlet, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I read a book quite some time ago. It's a very memorable book to me, and it sums things up extremely well. But I got to tell you up front, I don't remember the title of the book. I don't remember the author of the book. I don't remember anything about the plot of the book, and I don't remember a single solitary character in the book. Right now, you're probably wondering and about ready to ask me, what do you mean this is a memorable book to you, yet you don't remember the author or the title of the book, nor any of the characters of the book, or a single solitary thing about the plot of the book? How can that possibly be? Are you lying to us? No. I'm not lying to you. Everything I just told you is totally true. I don't remember the author of the book. I don't remember the title of the book. I don't remember any of the characters of the book. I don't remember anything about the plot of the book. And quite frankly, I have no inclination whatsoever to do any research to find those things out, because that's not what's so important to me about that book. What is important and memorable to me about that book is a quote from the very last page of that book. To be more precise, it's a rhetorical question, and it goes like this. Is maturity the acceptance of conflict? I've lived most of my life with that as a key component of my personal philosophy. I've got to admit, however, I don't think I'd go to the trouble of writing an entire book just to prove that simple, self-evident truth. For some, this lesson concerning maturity can be learned in a matter of seconds. For others, an eternity is not enough. I hope and pray that you are in that former category. God help you if you are in the latter. And now, good jurors, I've provided you with all of the evidence necessary for you to arrive at an intelligent verdict. Shortly, you will proceed to your deliberations. Will you find the truth always innocent and lies guilty of all charges, or will you finally realize the absolute absurdity of those two insane notions? Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I rest my case. Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. My voice print is my signature.